This is Fresh Air. Many African Americans look to African culture to help them understand their own identities. But my guest says there's no such thing as African culture. There are many cultures within Africa. Kwame Anthony Appiah is from Ghana. His new book, In My Father's House, is about the possibilities and pitfalls of African identity. In a New York Times review, Charles Johnson called the book a ground-clearing analysis of the absurdities and damaging presuppositions that have clouded our discussions on race, Africa, and nationalism since the 19th century. Appiah is a professor in Harvard's African American Studies department. I asked him if he thinks Africa has a different meaning to him than it does to his students.
Short answer, yes. Longer answer, I think that it means different things to different African American students as well. And I think that at different times, and when I'm thinking about different things, Africa can mean different things to me. But I think the fundamental difference is that I think many African Americans think of Africa and their connection with Africa through ideas about race that I have persuaded myself after much thought are incoherent.
An example?
Well, I think that people, for example, are critical of some African Americans who are not interested in Africa on the grounds that if you are an African American, you ought to be interested in Africa. Now, it seems to me that that presupposes that what you ought to be interested in depends ultimately on your race, and I don't think that's true. I think that there are many reasons for being interested in Africa for all Americans and for people all over the world, including Africans, and I try to persuade people when I teach and talk about Africa that its situation is interesting, and I do know that people who feel some connection with Africa by descent are easier audiences, they're more interesting, more likely to be interested. But the fact is that being of African descent doesn't guarantee you any special insight into Africa's situation, and being of African descent doesn't guarantee that you will be interested in Africa. And I think people are entitled to choose whether they want to feel connected with Africa or not.
We say that the invention of Africa as something more than a geographical entity is really an outgrowth of European racism.
Yeah, I think that's right. If you want to, you have to start by remembering that Africans themselves, the people of Africa, both north and south of the Sahara, haven't, by and large, thought of themselves as African for very long. Most of them thought of themselves as Gikuyu or Yoruba, or in the north, maybe as Muslims or Moroccans. And it's only really in the last 100 years or so that it's, for anyone in Africa, it's been a significant thought that they were an African, that they belonged together with everybody else on the continent. And the people for whom that idea first became important were Africans and African Americans who were educated in Western ideas, 19th century Western ideas, which put race at the very center of thinking about who people were, at the very center of thinking about identity. Because by the mid-19th century, one of the central ideas about culture in educated discourse in the Western world was that what your race was very significant in determining what your cultural capacities were, and what and once your cultural capacities had been determined, that was connected with politics through the idea that people who shared culture should live together in nations. And modern nationalism of the sort that we now see doing so much harm in Bosnia and in other parts of Eastern Europe, as well as in South Asia and in Africa, that kind of nationalism is really a modern phenomenon, and it draws on these ideas about race and culture and nation and brings them together in a way that was fundamentally put together after the Enlightenment in Western Europe.
I'd like to put your intellectual views into the context of the environment that you grew up in. You grew up in a family that was part European and part Asante. Mm-hmm. Tell us about your mother and father.
My mother is an English woman. She was raised in the country in England, the daughter of a politician, a British politician. And in her late teens and early 20s, she was a young socialist, as my grandfather was, and she became involved with all sorts of international decolonization movements through church organizations and through something called the World Council of Democratic Youth. And she became very involved just after the war in anti-racist work in Britain. And through that, she met my father, who was a Ghanaian student in London, a law student who was, by the time she met him, president of the West African Students Union, which was an important gathering of West African students in London who were very much preoccupied at that point with getting independence for their various countries. They met, they fell in love, they married, and I was born about a year later, and not long after that, my father finished his studies and we went home to Ghana. So the first place I remember is our home in Ghana, in Kumasi.
So were the cultures of both Ghana and England present in your home all the time?
Absolutely. And I would say, when you say Ghana, that's right. It wasn't just Asante. We knew about other parts of Ghana, and we knew about other things in Europe than England. My father made us learn English well, because he thought of English as the only national language in Ghana. It's spoken by more people than anything else, and he wanted us to know English well. But he also wanted us to know French, because it was the second language of Africa. And so we learned about other parts of Africa, other parts of Europe. And we were brought up, I think, believing in the virtue of intercultural and international understanding and friendship.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Kwame Anthony Appiah. His new book is called In My Father's House, Africa in the Philosophy of Culture. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Kwame Anthony Appiah is my guest, and he's a professor of African American Studies at Harvard. Now, what was your religious background? I think you grew up in with Methodist.
Well, I was. I have a religious background that is unfortunately as complicated as everything else. My father, and grandfather in Ghana were very active Methodists. They're both very active in the church. My father preached as a lay preacher. My mother was raised an Episcopalian, an Anglican in England. And in fact, her father was one of the few laymen to preach in St. Paul's. He was a very devout Anglican, too. But and they kept different church lives in Ghana. My father went on with the Methodist Church. My mother became involved in a church which has gradually been taken over by its congregation, because she felt, and they felt, increasingly opposed to the kind of breakdown of Christianity into different sects. And so they had a church which was composed of people who had been raised as Copts and Episcopalians and Catholics and Baptists and Pentecostalists, all working together and inviting priests and pastors from different denominations. And that was where I went to Sunday school. So I was brought up in a sort of anti-sectarian, multi-Christian background. We were also taught to respect the Muslims in our country. We obviously had Muslim friends and Muslims visiting the house, and in fact I have Muslim cousins, and I remember one of the most enjoyable parts of the year was Ramadan, because they were fasting all day, they had wonderful feasts at night.
Now, growing up in a Christian family, were you still aware of traditional Asante beliefs and customs, and how was that integrated into the house?
That it only occurs to me looking back how much we were also brought up in a world which acknowledged the traditional religion of Asante. But we did, and it shows up everywhere in the most basic features of daily life. In Asante, if you open a bottle of spirits, or if you start a new keg of palm wine, you pour some on the ground for the ancestors and you say a little prayer mentioning the names of the founder of your family and some important ancestors. And this can be relatively at a low key. It doesn't feel like a very grand or over-invested event, but it happens all the time. And certainly whenever my father opened a bottle, he'd pour some. Sometimes he'd go to the edge of the room not to pour it on the carpet. And he would say something. So I learned, one of the ways in which I learned the names of our ancestors was by hearing these libations in a very ordinary context.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering how your beliefs in spirits, your feelings about spirits, have survived a contemporary European education. You were educated in Cambridge, you know, because I think for a lot of people, intellectualism makes it difficult, if not impossible, to believe in certain yes. traditional beliefs.
Yes. I have to say that they haven't survived in my own case, really. Mm-hmm. I once had a conversation with my father at the end of the evening on Ghanaian television. They alternated, or they used to alternate, the national hymn and the national anthem. And my father was saying that the national hymn, which mentions God, of course, ought to be used to replace the national anthem. And I said, but that would be a pity for Ghanaians who were not theists. And my father said, there aren't any Ghanaians who are that stupid. And it is true that atheism, not just atheism about God, the high God, but atheism about other gods, is extremely unusual in Ghana. And but the fact is that, as a result of all sorts of things in my education, I myself find it no longer possible to believe in them. But I still must say that I find many of the rituals that go with both Christian and non-Christian religious life in Ghana tremendously moving. And when my father died and the time came for his funeral, I don't think it would have been as easy for us, myself and my sisters, to deal with it if we hadn't had those forms, both the Christian ones and the libations to the ancestors, as part of our support.
Given all the thought you've put into African literature and African-American literature and so on and so on, what do you think of the controversy over Afrocentric curricula?
Well, I think that the first thing you have to understand about Afrocentrism is that it has a great deal to do with the disintegration of urban America, mm-hmm. Black America, and not much to do with Africa. It's an attempt to reclaim a sense of community in a place where real communities are falling apart. And so Africa is very largely a sort of symbolic element in Afrocentrism. Having said that, and I should also say that I think that unfortunately some Afrocentrists have borrowed the worst features of Eurocentrism. That is, they have simply turned it on its head and said, you said everything European was best, now we're saying everything African-derived is best. And that's the wrong lesson to draw. The lesson that I think you should draw from the history of Eurocentrism is the lesson I tried to draw earlier, that human beings as a whole have much to gain from being rooted in traditions, but learning to respect and live with others. So what I think about an Afrocentric curriculum is that all American students ought to know more about Africa and Asia and about the history of African Americans and about the differences between the kinds of ways in which the American population was made up with immigrants and slaves and different kinds of immigration from Europe and Asia at different times, and with an increasing appreciation of the fascinating intellectual, cultural, moral, religious lives of people all around the planet. I think that's good, but I don't think that there's any reason why that should be taught just to black kids any more than I think it was right when black kids were only taught about European culture and were presented with it as if it was a gift from somebody else. The point is that culture belongs to anybody who's willing to do the work to claim it. You know, if you're willing to do the work of claiming European culture, then it's just as much yours as somebody with a white skin. And similarly, I think people with white skins ought to be interested in doing the work to claim an appreciation of the fascinating, rich, and wonderful lives in culture of Africans over the centuries.
Kwame Anthony Appiah is the author of In My Father's House, Africa in the Philosophy of Culture. He's a professor of African American Studies at Harvard. This is Fresh Air.